You are listening to a sermon by Henry Neufeld, recorded on Sunday, August 8, 2010, at the Point Grey Inter-Mennonite Fellowship in Vancouver, British Columbia. The opinions expressed by the speaker are not necessarily those of the church. This recording is licensed for personal use by individuals only and may not be copied, broadcast, or redistributed without the prior permission of the church board. For more information, please visit our website at www.pgimf.org.
There are times in this church when we get to the sermon when I think really it might not be necessary. This might be one of those days, but you can decide that for yourself a little later. In the chapters of Job that Kevin referred to, we have the beginning of the conversation between Job and his friends. And each of his three friends takes a crack at straightening out Job. Now, seeing problems or suffering makes some of us want to fix things. And this is what happens to Job's friends. They sat in silence with Job for 7 days, and then they were ready to fix him. Eugene Peterson has some rather blunt comments about Job and suffering and these three friends. He says, "Sufferers attract fixers the way roadkill attracts vultures." The moment we find ourselves in trouble of any kind, he says, sick in the hospital, bereaved by a friend's death, dismissed from a job or a relationship, depressed or bewildered, people start showing up telling us exactly what is wrong, what's wrong with us, and what we have to do to get better. Well, Job's friends don't waver from their belief that Job must have sinned to incite God's punishment. And as the speeches progress, Job's friends increasingly berate him for refusing to confess his sins, even though they themselves don't have any idea what those sins might be. Job complains bitterly about his situation, and after he gets done cursing the day he was born, he concludes his speech by saying, "I have no peace, no quietness, I have no rest, only turmoil." Now that's a pretty grim description, but that's how Job saw it. And then Job's three friends start responding. And the dialogue that follows is quite fascinating. And when I read and reread these passages, I wasn't quite sure what I should do with them. Then after reading Eugene Peterson's translation of Job, I thought, well, the most effective thing might be to summarize these 10 chapters and get three people up here and read them. So what you're going to be hearing is four of us dialoguing for a while about the four passages from Job. So I'll ask Ed, Evan, and Andre to come up. And Ed is Job. So, Andre, would you begin, please?
Would you mind if I said something? Under the circumstances, it's hard to keep quiet. You've done this many times, Job. You spoke words that clarify. You gave people hope. You've encouraged people who are about to quit. Your words have put stumbling people on their feet. Now you're the one in trouble. Think, has a truly innocent person ever ended up on the scrap heap? Don't blame fate when things go wrong. Trouble doesn't come from nowhere. If I were in your shoes, I'd go straight to God to throw myself on his mercy. After all, he's famous for great and unexpected acts. He gives rain across the wide earth. He raises the down and out. The downtrodden are saved by God. So what a blessing it is when God corrects you. From one disaster to another, he delivers you.
Let God step on me, squash me like a bug, and be done with me for good. God has dumped the works on me. It's enough to turn anyone's stomach. Do you think I can pull myself up by my bootstraps? I don't even have any boots. When desperate people give up on God, their friends at least should stick with them. Confront me with the truth and I'll shut up. Honest words never hurt anyone. I hate this life. Leave me alone. Let up on me, will you? The way things are going, I'll soon be dead.
How can you talk like this? You're talking nonsense. Does God mess up? Does God ever get things backwards? It's plain that your children sinned against him. Otherwise, why would God have punished them? Here's what you must do. Get down on your knees before God Almighty. There's no way God will reject a good person. If you're innocent, as you say, God will set everything right and reestablish your fortunes. God will let you laugh again. You will raise the roof with shouts of joy.
So what's new? I know all this. The question is, how can mere mortals get right with God? If I wanted to bring my case before him, what chance would I have? How could I construct a defense that would influence God? God and I are not equals, and I can't bring a case against him. How I wish I had an arbitrator. Then I'd speak up and state my case boldly. As things stand now, there's no way I can do it. God, don't bring in a verdict of guilty without letting me know the charges you're bringing. What's all this about anyway? This compulsion to dig up some dirt, to find some skeleton in my closet. You know good and well I'm not guilty. You made me like a handcrafted piece of pottery, and now you're going to smash me to pieces? You gave me life itself, an incredible love. You watched and guarded every breath I took, but you never told me about this part. I should have known there was more to it. If I so much as missed a step, you'd notice and pounce. You wouldn't let me get by with a thing. So why did you have me born? I wish no one had ever laid eyes on me. Isn't it time to call it quits on my life? Can't you let up and let me smile just once before I die and am buried?
What a flood of words. Shouldn't we put a stop to it? Job, do you think you can carry on like this and will say nothing? You claim my doctrine is sound and impeccable. Well, how I wish God would give you a piece of his mind. Do you think you can explain the mystery of God? God is far higher than you can imagine, far deeper than you can comprehend. If you set your heart on God, if you reach out to him, if you scrub your hands of sin and refuse to entertain evil in your home, you'll be able to face the world unashamed and keep a firm grip on life. You'll forget your troubles. Your world will be washed in sunshine. Full of hope, you'll relax, confident again. You'll look around, sit back, and take it easy.
I'm sure you speak for all the experts. And when you die, there'll be no one left to tell us how to live. But don't forget that I also have a brain. I don't intend to play second fiddle to you. It doesn't take an expert to know these things. I'm ridiculed by my friends, ridiculed without mercy. Ridiculed without mercy. So that's the man who had a conversation with God. Look at that man who never did any wrong. But ask the animals what they think. Let them teach you. Put your ear to the earth. Learn the basics. The fish in the ocean will tell you their stories. They all know and agree that God is sovereign. Isn't this all common sense? True wisdom and power belong to God, from whom we learn how to live and also what to live for. Everything you know, I know. So I'm not taking a back seat to any of you. I'm taking my case straight to God Almighty. I've had it with you. You're a bunch of pompous quacks. I've had it with you. I wish you'd shut your mouths. Silence is the only claim to wisdom. Listen now while I make my case. Consider my side of things for a change. Or are you going to keep on lying to do God a service? Why do you always take his side? Do you think he needs a lawyer to defend himself? How would you fare if you were in the dock? Your lies might convince a jury, but would they convince God? Your sayings are good for nothing but gathering dust. So hold your tongue while I have my say. You better pay attention to what I'm telling you. Listen carefully with both ears. Can you prove any charges against me? Please, God, I have two requests. Grant them so I'll know I can count on you. First, lay off the afflictions. The terror is too much for me. Second, address me directly so I can answer you. How many sins have been charged against me? Show me the list. How bad is it? Why do you stay hidden and silent? Why kick me around like an old tin can? Why beat a dead horse? We're all adrift in the same boat. We spring like wildflowers in the desert and then wilt. Transient as the shadow of a cloud. Mortals have a limited lifespan. You've decided how long we shall live, so why not give us a break? Even ditch diggers get occasional days off. For a tree, there's always hope. Chop it down, and it still has a chance. Its roots can sprout fresh sprouts. But men and women, they die and stay dead. They breathe their last, and that's it. Why don't you just bury me alive? Get me out of the way until your anger cools. But don't leave me there. Set a date when you'll see me again. If we humans die, will we live again? Thank you.
I have just a few comments about these passages. The first one is a story told by Barbara Brown Taylor, who was working in her garden and poked herself in the eye with a stick quite inadvertently. Here's how she describes it. Every time I woke up, the pain in my eye shot through me like an electric shock. The pain got worse. I prayed the kind of prayers I thought I would never pray. I began bargaining with God, and when that did not work, I called God's honor into question. I begged God to do something. I dared God to do something. Finally, I found myself turning away from the God in charge of pain removal toward the God who had stayed with me through the pain, no matter what I said. The God who stays with you through the pain. She makes the distinction between pain and suffering. She says, pain is what happens physically. We all know where the pain is. It's in the head, in the body, in the hip, wherever. Suffering is our response to that pain, or one response to that pain. Eliphaz tells Job that the innocent will not be punished, implying, clearly, Job is not innocent. He's guilty. Find the sin in your life, Job. It's there. You're just not admitting it. Misfortune, in this line of thinking, is always divine punishment for something. Traditional theology says that you reap what you sow, the idea being that if you live a good life, you'll be rewarded. If you lead a lousy life, you'll be punished. Job's three friends argue in the affirmative, saying that Job's misfortunes were proof that he had committed sins for which he was being punished. His friends also say that good fortune is always the divine reward. And if Job would just renounce his sins, he would immediately experience the return of good fortune. Well, the story of Job destroys this myth. Here's a fine ethical man, a pillar of the community, who loses everything except his wife and his life. The story of Job points out that personal sin is not necessarily the cause of a person's affliction. Job was doing everything right when suddenly everything went wrong. Job demonstrates the inadequacy of human reasoning in the presence of tragedy and suffering. The most obvious explanation for Job's suffering is sin. But Job is vindicated of this charge. He was a just, upright man. Job's friends were not able to explain his suffering, no matter how logical and sound their theology. And that's the problem. If only we could know why. If only we could see God's plan from beginning to end, the suffering would be more tolerable. And what gets us down is that our own reasoning is inadequate. But God never tells Job why. And often we don't know why, and we won't know why the innocent suffer. God doesn't tell us. Maybe suffering, like many of life's experiences, is designed to make us better people. Maybe suffering helps us call our lives into question. My last point is, how do we respond to people in distress? How do we reconcile the presence of illness, tragedy, and evil with a loving God? When there's an accident, an unexpected death, or a marriage breakdown, we often hear comments like, well, they were such nice people, they're such great neighbors, implying, like Job's friends, that bad things shouldn't happen to nice people. But they do. And when tragedy strikes, someone will give us all the stock answers like Job's friends. Eugene Peterson says that when bad things happen, religious friends, like Job's friends, can be the worst. He said they're the fixers. They're so convinced they know the truth. They're so confident they can fix you up if only you listen. Job's friends were not able to fix him. And I'm reminded of our friend Alice, who was dying of cancer, and she was visited by a fixer who was also a clergyman. And he told her that if she would just have more faith, she would be cured. If ever there was a saintly person, Alice was a saint. And she asked, how do I get more faith? A very good question. So, when we or someone we know faces a disaster, may God grant us the patience and the impatience of Job. May God grant us the right questions and the faith of Job.